This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. If you've ever been to the Queen's Night Market in Flushing, you know that the experience is like no other. The smoky flavors in the air, options of global cuisine, and a delightful price point, around $5 or $6. If you go to the market's website right now, it says, see you this summer, we hope. But in case that doesn't happen, we can at least try some of the recipes from the new cookbook, The World Eats Here, which brings food from the market vendors straight to your kitchen. It's just that you have to make it. As part of our Summer in Place series, we want to talk about The World Eats Here, amazing food and the inspiring people who make it at New York's Queens Night Market. It shares 88 recipes from more than 50 vendors. If you miss restaurants like Berg's Pastrami or Dosa Mama, you can find recipes for hot meals, drinks, desserts, even salads that will let you recreate the market feeling at home. The World Eats Here is written by Queens Night Market founder John Wang. Hi, John.
Hi, Austin. How are you?
And oral historian, multidisciplinary artist, Storm Garner. Hi, Storm. Oh, Storm, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear
me? Hi. Yes, I can hear you. I just want to make sure you were there.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So, John, you were inspired to make Queens Night Market after visiting night markets in Taiwan. What was it about these night markets that really struck you and thought could be great to add to the New York scene?
Yeah, so I spent my childhood summers visiting Taiwan, visiting extended family, usually about 6 weeks every summer. And all I ever wanted to do was visit these night markets. There's something really electric about them, and trying to specify exactly what that is a little bit tricky, but I'm sure it has to do with, you know, the entire, so they take over these city streets, and it seems like all of the city is sort of gathering casually and happily without any regard to, you know, background or socioeconomic status. There's food for kids. There's tons to do. There's tons of shopping. There's lots of haggling. And, you know, it's something I wanted to do every night as a kid, and I don't think that's changed much now that I'm 38. I still want it. That's all I want to do. Maybe not visit my night market all the time, but I do love night markets and local markets and something, you know, I wanted to bring New Yorkers all together in a sort of convenient, affordable, accessible way.
So, Storm, you write in the book that you are excited about the night market in terms of its cultural resonance. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I first met John, he was just toying with the idea of starting a night market, and I heard lots of brainstorms around it, and I just was so inspired because, for me, it represented, I guess, my favorite part about being in New York is this kind of feeling of spontaneity that you can, you know, ride the subway or sit on a park bench and strike up a conversation with somebody, know nothing at all like you, who has stories from halfway around the world, and you just learn so much. And I feel like something about the dawn of the cell phone, smartphone era kind of changed that. People are more like in their own little bubbles. Mm-hmm. And it just felt a little less spontaneous. So I think starting in the, 2010 or something, I was starting to feel like, am I getting older or is something just culturally changing? And I thought John's night market idea just brought that back in the best way, this feeling of, you know, everyone together and spontaneous encounters and excitedly learning about the unknown.
And John, you emphasize that the Queens Night Market is, I think, and you put it in the book, not about food trends or food porn. Why was it important for you to distinguish this market from sort of that trendy foodie culture?
I think you might have mentioned, or maybe I'm just imagined you mentioned, I don't personally view the Queens Night Market as a food event. To me, it's still a cultural event, and you're sort of broadening people's horizons and introducing them to cultures and cultural elements that they might not know about. I think in the book, and if you go to our vendor application and our website, it's very clear that the most important criterion for food aspiring or applying food vendors is this: relating what you want to sell to your cultural and personal background. And by that, I basically mean, you know, we don't necessarily want to feature things that you've invented just because it'll sell, or, you know, because you went to culinary school, you hopped on this sort of bandwagon of food trends. So basically, we try to, through our vendors, preserve and maybe just prolong some cultural traditions that have been passed down through generations, which we're probably well on our way to losing a lot of cultural and culinary traditions, given, I mean, which may not be a good or bad thing, but just as a matter of fact. So that's why our emphasis is not necessarily on, you know, the Instagrammability of our our food, or you know, how it fits into the latest trends and you know, viral nature of food porn these days.
So Storm, in the book, there are these great stories, and they go, the recipes are great, but there are also these stories of people's families, of their personal anecdotes. As you were putting together the book, why did you want to put these in? And is there one you can share with our audience to give people a sense of what you were going after?
Yeah, well, it's hard to choose one, because why I wanted to put them in there was just precisely to show how incredibly diverse they are. You know, any assumption you could possibly make about, you know, what is a food vendor at an open-air market in New York City right now, these stories will disprove again and again in so many ways that you hadn't even considered. The vendors come from incredible array of professional backgrounds, obviously geographic origin. Many are immigrants, and many are just are New York-born and raised children of immigrants. Who have sort of becoming adults decided to really invest in their parents' culinary culture that they grew up with, and they have like a newfound appreciation for it and they want to share it with the world. And there's just, but there's just so many different through lines. I wanted to really showcase that. And also, I think along with this food, you know, foodie Instagram social media trend, you see a lot of people sort of, there's a lot of like pictures of foods and like the sort of attitude of like, ooh, let's try all the exotic foods that I can, you know, find and show off that I'm eating them. And that's nice. And it's nice when you can learn the names and stuff. But I feel like so much is missing if you don't actually meet the people who are making the food and find out, you know, why and what it means to them and what memories it's associated, you know, in their culture, if it means something specific. It's just such a richer experience, and it really sort of creates this imaginary link to places all across the globe. And of course, you know, forms friendships. And so I really want to showcase that. But I mean, for one example that I love is, you know, of course, there are many of the immigrants in the book, there are many kind of American dream stories, but there's also many stories of kids who were dragged here by their parents for, you know, practical family reasons, and just had no idea, no desire to move to the States, and just kind of made do. And I feel like right now during the pandemic, these are the stories that I keep thinking about, because I feel like there's so much to learn from, for example, Sukita Sok, who moved here from Cambodia when she was 15, because her parents made her, basically. Mm-hmm. And she describes in her story, she says, "It was nothing wrong with my life over there, you know. It's not like for her parents during the genocide or as asylum refugees. They had to leave. It was bad, really bad. There was no food, starvation, everything. But for me," she says, "I had my life together. It's not as modernized over there, but I had my friends. I had my people. I knew my place. When I moved here, everything was snatched away from me. I was mad at them." So I love hearing her description in her own words in the book. I feel like that really captures something that we're all feeling at home right now. We're just like, you know, I didn't sign up for this. Why am I stuck at home? Why is my job gone? Why is my income gone? How am I supposed to make do with this new lifestyle? But Sukita, you know, moved on to start a food business and establish herself, and you know, she's doing great, and it's wonderful to be inspired by stories like that, and on how you can, you know, just kind of make do with what you're given and make the best of it.
My guests are Storm Garner and John Wang. We're talking about their cookbook, The World Eats Here, Amazing Food and the Inspiring People Who Make It, at New York's Queens Night Market. John, can you explain how the book is organized?
Sure. It's got 88 recipes from over 50 vendors representing over 40 countries. each recipe is paired with a narrative background or, you know, story or something personal about the vendor chef. And each of those chapters is organized by sort of global regions. So there's, you know, the Americas, and then there's Europe and Asia and Africa. That's how the book is organized.
And it's got these great illustrations. Who's your illustrator?
Beth Bugler from The Experiment. She did an amazing job, and we didn't have to pay out of pocket for an illustrator. So that was a double bonus there.
And I think everybody wants to know, will you be back?
That's a question that I hear many times a day.
Sure.
I honestly don't know, and I'm sure, you know, in the scheme of things, the reopening of the Queen's Night Market is probably pretty, it's kind of like peanuts compared to all the suffering out there, but obviously it's something I think about every day. But I also try to put it in the back of my mind, in addition to other projects we have going on, like Fuel the Front Lines, which is feeding healthcare workers,
mm-hmm.
I also don't want to sort of rev our engines up too early, prematurely. That would sort of be disappointing in the future, sort of lead to a disappointment if we started planning too early to reopen. But also, you know, in addition to sort of watching for guidance on public gatherings in general, there are other considerations we need to make, sort of like a moral decision about whether we can possibly open up safely, regardless mm-hmm. of, you know, city regulations and policies.
Well, until we know, people can get your book, The World Eats Here, Amazing Food and the Inspiring People Who Make It, at New York's Queen's Night Market. John Wang and Storm Garner, thank you so much for being with us, and good luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.